On today's episode, I have Tim, who has struggled with mental health and used fitness, not only that, used boxing to help him get out of where he was to a healthier state of mind. Tim also told us about the work he does with youths and how he gets kids that are not being looked after to try new things and to find new avenues to express themselves and to become better humans. This is a great episode. I truly enjoyed talking with Tim. I hope you like it too. The big thing I say is like, you gotta win the morning.
Heavy requirements on them to lift heavy weights.
The conversation has to be changed.
What you truly value.
The right way and the wrong way.
Become the source of struggle.
I can't like find myself in tears from the physical pain.
You're listening to the Stephen Kinsler Podcast.
Hey guys, so this is episode 53. I have my guest, Tim Teo. Tim is on the show. He has a pretty impressive story in regards to starting boxing, using fitness for his mental health, and also he kind of helps young kids kind of get a handle on what they're doing. So, Tim, firstly, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for inviting me to the show.
No, and we've connected through Paul and Alliance and stuff. Yeah. How long have you been in Alliance now, actually?
And you officially joined January.
Oh, so were you at Q1?
No, I missed it. I couldn't make it, unfortunately. Missed it, yeah. Gutted. I've seen all the videos of people that could have got... I could have loved it. Absolutely loved it.
That's great. They're a great experience. I like it. They're definitely worth the investment just doing the Qs and the quarterlies alone. But Tim, obviously, I think, are you 48 now still? Or 48?
Yeah, nearly 50.
Nearly 50. But you, like, the first thing is that was surprising when we spoke was you started boxing at 45, was it?
Your first 45. Yeah, no, what happened, I had a horse riding accident and I broke my body, smashed my bones to pieces. And so I decided to go self-employed and I managed to rent some land at just off Denby Boxing Club. I thought, oh, this is great. I love fitness. I love, you know, I run and I kept fit generally. So I had to build my body back up to what was my level of fitness at the time. And I got into boxing and used the boxing gym. But yeah, so cut story short, I got into boxing and I wanted to do what I was saying. You know, I was teaching kids, adults to box. Yeah. But I never experienced what it was like to get into the gym and to be, to say what I was teaching people and have that experience of the nervousness, because you can have all the people around you, but at the end of the day, it's just you in that ring. It's just you that's there. It's a lonely sport in that sense. I did a white collar boxing match and yeah, it was scary, but I loved it.
No, I haven't been punched in the face since I think I was 16. I didn't want to be punched in the face when I was 16. But what was it like, obviously, in a boxing match? So I don't know, like, what's that saying? Like, you're the hardest man in the room until you get punched in the face. Is that Mike Tyson saying? What was it like taking the first kind of couple of hits, even in the training?
It was taking that first, because the guy I fought, Isaac Gibbs. I was his 453rd. He's a journeyman, you know. He'd done 400 or whatever fights, and so I knew that had a big punch on him. But what I had done is trained really hard. I'd done rounds and rounds and rounds and rounds of sparring with people, name dropping Craig Winter, ex professional boxer, Pete Salami, who's now a professional boxer. So I got used to what it was like to punch. And that, obviously, it's all about defense, isn't it? Yeah. But once you get that first punch, because sparring's different, you're more relaxed, but you've got your nerves to deal with, you've got the crowd to deal with, you're putting yourself out there. Am I going to fight right? Stick to my training. You get in there, that first punch, okay, stick to my training. Got people shouting at you, you got the crowd going, your nerves are... You think you're calm until you step in and the bell goes ding. Scared the living daylights. But once you get that first punch, you're right, okay, in my keep to my training, keep my hands, just do what I've trained to do for the last 16 weeks intensively. But yeah, it's an experience. I use that experience to when I'm not feeling so good. Just remember, I've done that. I've been there. I've enjoyed that. I'm never going to be a professional boxer or anything like that.
But you can relate it now back to people.
Yeah, and that anyone can do it. It doesn't matter what age you are. And that as long as you do the fundamental things of training and whatever you're doing in life, whether that's courses, whether that's mental health, fitness, constructive work, you know, you do the training first, you do the repetitiveness every day, and you work hard basically, and you turn up every day and you do what you say you're going to do, like Paul says. And you know, it is exactly that. Boxing was huge for me, and then I could go back and say, well, I've experienced it and helped people from my experience. Like, this is what you need to do, this is when the nerves come in, this is what you do, you know, give them the feedback. And I drew with Isaac Gibbs because he's such a well-known fighter in the white collar world. You know, I'd like to fight again, but fight somebody that's as fresh as me always. But you know, I'm nearly 50 now. I can't take too many knocks to the head. You know, I haven't got any brain cells left as it is. It's a dangerous sport. It really is.
Yeah, I think that's actually something that's I just want to make a note on that. So with like you said, I was like, so you start well, got training at 45, you had a fight, but that whole thing of you're too old to do things, I think, is possibly one of the worst things. If you're passionate and you really want to do something, and you do it safely, like you don't go in with a bunch of lads who knock the hell out of you for 4 weeks and you can't function. Well, you do it the right steps. You understand that you're not as agile, or your body doesn't move as well, and you're more prone to injuries and all that. Like, you can still go and do those things and test yourself. I think one of the biggest things as a human, especially for men and women, but I think men kind of need it more, is to the ability to keep testing the resolve, their mental strength, their physical strength. Yeah. Because otherwise, I think if we lose that as we age, we become docile, and I think that affects more men's mental health because they can't express themselves.
Exactly. So, you know, the biggest thing for me was getting my body in, my mental health was suffering because I couldn't move. I couldn't do physical activities, but then I trained myself bit by bit. I used to do 5 reps a day and then build up to 10, you know, so my physical health affects my mental health. You know, being fit helps healthy body, healthy mind.
Yeah.
And people were saying, you can't go into this. You're too old. There's too many young fighters. But I knew I couldn't fight as well as other people. I had that understanding, but pushing myself, that's what I needed. I needed the goal. So I needed to focus on something. 12 weeks time, I will. And I made myself accountable. On that day, I'm fighting. So giving me the accountability of myself to say, I'm going to do what I said I was going to do. It pushed me to train harder, and it gave me a go. It pushed me out of my comfort zone because I was just doing the same thing every day. Train, you know, I enjoyed it. Don't get me wrong, and I hopefully I've helped a lot of kids and adults. But you become stagnant. That's the problem if you don't have a goal, don't set out, or you don't have a physical. So, my being physical is paramount for me. You know, I've got to keep, if I don't keep physical, I don't go running, I don't train on the bar. At the moment, I'm just doing 5 reps, skipping reps and bag reps and sparring, but that's enough for me at the moment, you know. We're never too old, and it doesn't matter what we do or how we do it or what we're doing or what our focus is on. You're never too old. You know, you take into responsibility the safety and keeping yourself safe and everything like that. And you do it, if you're doing boxing, for example, you join a club, you get trained by a trainer, you get the, you know, whatever you're doing, you get the qualifications, or you get someone that's qualified to do that, because you do yourself an injury, basically, you know. Especially if I just jumped in with 4 hay bales around me knocking the bales of shit, you know, I could be seriously injured. But because I always done it with the same weight of guy, and all those kinds of things. And there was a referee there and the safety, and you have a medical, white collar is different to what it used to be 30 years ago. Nowadays, you have a medical test before you go in, you know, you're checked before and during the fight and after the fight. So it's not white collar. When they say white collar, I hate the white collar, but it's a lot safer. But mentally, to put yourself in that position, and no matter what you do, when I put myself in the position, I made myself accountable. And also the experience I gained from that is helped me further than what I do today. And
that's, well, like you said, there's an inherent risk. Yes, you could get injured, you could get hurt, and you could get too, but we know that boxing is a sport that can cause brain damage. But also now we're saying headering a football cause brain damage, and will be like all kind of collision or combat sports have an inherent risk, long-term effects, side effects. And I think that's something that, and I know we're trying to put a stop to an awful lot of it in sports. And I think rugby, you can't tackle to a certain age, like proper tackles. They're talking about getting rid of headers in football. And but I think the sport is amazing and it's really good for people to do. But at no point, there is not one sport in the world that is actually healthy for the human body to do, because there's a negative connotation, there's a negative effect of repeating. So with boxing, you're giving points. Your body's getting damaged, but also it will harden up to a point as well. Everything has an imbalancing factor. But to take it away, to make it all super safe, will remove the reason for boxing. The reason why people want to challenge themselves to box or want to do a combat sport, because there is that slight risk of could get hurt, so I have to put the time and effort in. If I knew I could step into a ring and go 12 rounds and not have any proper severe damage done to me, then a lot of people would go boxing. But then it would take away from the whole point of the sport itself. So I think that's something that's, I think, like I said already, it's more of it's not just a masculine thing, but it is a masculine trait of can you hold yourself? Can you stand?
Confidence-wise, I can handle myself. Not that I go out fighting, I don't, of course, but it's that confidence it gives you. Do you know what? And it's not about fighting. It's not about I'm going to go out on a Friday night, have a couple of drinks. I'm a boxer. I do boxing. It's just a confidence. But going back to what you just said, and then calculated risks. So when I worked in healthcare, and I worked with extreme behaviours, autism, non-verbal. As a company, they would never take a calculated risk. So we had a non-verbal person that needed to go out and push the boundaries because they were doing the same thing day in, day out, which helped them. But I wanted to start a fire with them and them just stand around the fire. And the company like, no, you can't do that. It's too dangerous. This. So I wrote a risk assessment around that. They still said no. So when I went self-employed, I got that person back and I had a fire. And for 25 minutes per week, he excelled because he was allowed to be around the fire. He loved just putting sticks on the fire. It helped him. So going back to the boxing world or the training or fitness, you take a calculated risk in what you do. And that helps broaden your comfort zone because we always need to stretch. Not going into panic because we don't really learn panic sometimes. It's expanded, but taking a calculated risk. Yes, there's risk to boxing. Yes, there's risk to going for a run on a wet Wednesday morning or lifting weights. There's always a risk to what we do. But if we don't, we shrink. Our physical health shrinks, our mental health shrinks. We become stagnant. We don't progress. We as a man, I feel that I need to box. I need to keep fit, not caveman style, but just to feel better about myself. And it's different for each person, for each man or woman or whoever. It's calculated risk. You know, we all taking risks every day, and it is about, because I got so much from it by just putting myself in that position. I got so much from it and able to help younger kids, not about the boxing, because I have a dilemma with it, with boxing kids, but the physical, the dedication they have to put in, the fitness side of things is amazing. You know, being boxing fit is one of the because you cover all bases in a sense. But the dedication you have, the motivation you need to go training each day, there's so much that you can teach somebody. And then you can apply that to everyday life. That's my aspect, is that you do this training in this way. Imagine what you could do when you're at work or whatever you choose to do in life. So so much benefits from fitness.
I think that's it's a trait that's been destroyed because of what you're saying is like the risk assessment. Oh, we can't do this, we can't do that. We don't want to, because you don't want to mess it up or run the risk of being sued. But what we've done as a society is turn all our worries into systems so kids can't learn. And then when they become adults and have to deal with stuff, they their brains can't function. So you need to give them control. I guess like controlled, is it like you, like a fire is a controlled environment that you knew. Yes, there is a risk that something like catch fire, or you could put your hand in the fire.
Yeah.
But the risk is really minimal. But like as you said, like you could get on a bus, that bus could crash, train could crash. Yeah. Like you have no control over that. Well, I think we need to, especially with kids that would have like be on the spectrum or have kind of any issues that they're dealing with, is they need to be challenged. And when you test yourself physically and you become mentally stronger long term, and it's 100%. These are small nuggets over years allow someone to be able to do and achieve amazing things in their life. Whereas if we're just trying to protect them and stop them and this is what they do, and we let them keep doing that, and we won't put them outside their norm because they can't handle it. We have to challenge them, so because life is still going to go on. And
yeah, and it also is like nice. You know, when you get young kids that are in school and they're not doing so well, and you take them like I did, I took them out of the environment of school, put them in the field, and gave them paintball guns. I gave him soft bows and arrows. Mm. I gave him firelighting kits. I'm like, oh, can I have this sword? Yeah, as long as you be careful and you do this.
Yeah.
They learned to explore. They learned to naturally talk to each other. Two kids that didn't like each other, I put them in a situation where they were doing something fun. They were doing something that they'd never done before. And they get on. They don't get on in the school context, but at that moment in time, and it just helps them to explore everything. I mean, I know everything's quite wide, but I mean, friendships, motivation, doing something new, trying something new, challenge. We need to be, like I say, be more risk, take risks. That's not what I'm kind of trying to say, is put people in positions where they have to push themselves.
Yeah, there's a figure it out.
So I
100% agree on that. Like, and kids will figure it out, and it builds that adversity. That kind of that little kind of battery of shit goes wrong, my friend doesn't like me, or my friend doesn't want to play with me today, or someone said something about me. Because this is what's going to happen. Like, as kids grow up, stuff is going to be said to them. And if they haven't been kind of tested along the way, that one thing, like, you're overweight, or you're too tall, or you wear glasses, you're nerd, or you big ears, or something along those lines, that shouldn't be the thing that crushes the soul of a kid or a teenager. But what we're seeing is that is putting kids into therapy now. And because they've never had if my son comes in and this is just like his best Pokemon cards were traded to an older kid, he'd trick him. Truly, like, just got him to get rid of his best cards. And he got a bunch of shitty cards. And he was devastated. And I was like, yeah, okay. And I felt bad. The first thing I wanted to do was go out and go, hey, give me those cards back.
Yeah.
I was like, you will learn a lesson from them.
Yeah.
And you have to learn that lesson. And it's a horrible, and he was upset about it. And I said, did you say you're willing to give those cards to that boy? He said, yeah. I said, and you took those cards, yeah. So you traded those cards, yeah. I said, that's a deal. You made a deal. Now you were on the wrong side of that deal, but you'll learn from next time.
I always use the words of failure is feedback. It's giving us information of what is, you know, and that's what we try to teach. Okay, that didn't go as planned. That person said to you, you're an ugly bastard, you're an ugly person, you're a fat person. Okay, that's not nice. But that they're giving you information, and basically that's how they feel, you know. Yeah. And they're telling you that, you know, so don't take it personally. And it's helping them to have the tools and the techniques to go, hang on a minute, reframe get them to rethink what's just happened to them. Get them to give them the tools to go, yeah, that's your opinion. Give them a thicker skin in a sense. I don't know if that's the right thing to say, but that's how I see it, is giving them the tools
I think that getting a thicker skin, because you're, again, it's like, oh, you shouldn't have to do that. It's like, that's the world we live in. And it's not getting better. It's getting more polarized.
Yeah.
It's much more polarized. Everything's getting more aggressive. And kids need to now be able to, and this is something that we were told we weren't allowed to say when we were doing youth strength conditioning, is like, you can't say toughen up anymore. You have to say be more resilient. And I was like, okay, you can be more resilient, but what it means is that you need to be able to take it on the chin a little bit more. Boxing. Like, if you can't take a punch to the face, you're not going to do any way good at boxing. So taking it on the chin, learning from the failure is what you say failure is
feedback. It's just information. We need to teach kids better strategies than what we are at the moment, and physical health can be applied to behaviors. You know, you have to wake up every morning and go for a run. We have dedication, we have motivation, it doesn't matter how we feel, we have to do certain things.
Yeah.
And that will give them the confidence of, when they don't want to go into school because there's a bully, it was, okay, I know this is going to happen, but I'm going to face my situation. I'm going to face it, and I'm going to deal with this. And it's easy for me to say, but if we give them the tools that fitness gives people, then, you know, that's I think that's a huge way forward. And it's an onwards battle. And I think, you know, we can just do as much as we possibly can. And fitness is my underlying foundation to helping kids. And then it's just transforming that into everyday life, because kids are really struggling. They haven't got the tools, and the teachers haven't got the money, the time, the staff. You know, there's so many problems of the whole cog. But giving them the tools to get on with life and to get the best out, you know, everything that Paul talks about in his training is exactly what schools should be teaching people, is how to be confident, you know. And it's easy to say, but that's where it
is easy to say. And I think there's an easy fix. Ireland's no different than the UK, we're this kind of like helicoptering our kids to a ruined generation of kids that can't function. Is I know one way that could easily stop the confidence, lack of confidence, the lack of depression, anxiety, the overwhelm, all these things that like we never seen in school.
Yeah, exactly.
Didn't have to learn. It was like, we didn't know to label. It was like, no, I just don't think we had it. Because we're built to be more resilient. We're sent to school on your own. You have to come home. Sometimes you have to cook your own. Well, for us, we have to cook our own dinner. We have to make our own lunch for school, that type of thing. But if kids had 30 to 40 minutes of not sport, but exercise, doing hard things every single day, something hard every single day, they would be more resilient. And even if we did that every single day of the week, 5 days a week, we would have a healthier, stronger, physically fitter, mentally fitter generation of kids in 5 years.
And that's one of the reasons I set up Target Activities in 2018, throughout 2019, end of 2018, 2019. And it was just doing simple bushcraft, stuff that I did at home, stuff you did at home, built camps, built dens, made fires, but shoot bows and arrows, make bows and arrows, make spears, make all kinds of things, getting across the rivers with just a certain amount of thing. So we did an after school club, and it's that kind of thing that as a business, it wasn't financially feasible because there just wasn't enough kids. There wasn't enough, payment for it. But it's that aspect of how we brought up, is get them to think for themselves. You're on your own. You've got to make your own entertainment. You've got to deal with your own troubles when there's a bully on the local estate. You know, and those kinds of tools that we grew up with, we know that, we struggle. I have my moments and I struggle on a daily basis. I, you know, and a lot of we always will in certain parts of our lives, but I know I can rely back on my experiences.
Yeah.
And you could say, oh, as you get older, the more experience, but if we put these things in place in the first place,
yes,
you know, in schools, adventurous activities.
That's what I like. That would be, and I've said this before, is the way we work with our youth. We, like, every year we do, for our teenagers, we do a 16-hour endurance test. So from 5 o'clock in the morning to 9 o'clock at night, they're in cold water, carrying logs, and it's just 16 hours, constant work, walking, hiking, brilliant, challenges, teamwork, all of that. And I was like, why? It's like, because you need to, take Paul's group and a lot of other coaches like Paul and stuff like that. They're working with men 30 plus on average. And we're trying to get a handle on our shit because we couldn't get a handle on our shit. Or we lost it in our 20s or our 30s and we kind of went off the rails and we want to get back on track. Imagine we did that and gave the kids and teens the tools and trained them over like 10 years of doing it. And yeah, they lose it in their 20s and they go off and they test, they try things and they go off the rails and all that. Then they have the tools to get back and start again.
That's the thing. That would be their default. You know, if they go off and do something else, they would default, as we do, back to how we were brought, how we did things, how we, you know, we spent that time in the first 10 years of getting them to do this. It's such a hard job. And I think my job for sure is to get these young kids to realize their own capabilities, their own strengths, and then this is how we apply it. And fitness is the biggest thing.
And what type of kids are you working with now? Yeah, I think I know you had a name for them. Not a name for them, but there's
they're called NEET kids, not in education, employment, or training. So the school basically have said, we can't deal with these behaviors, we can't deal with these challenges. They are too unruly, they're too much, we can't deal with it. So what do you do? Well, you know, we can't deal with it. And so they lose their education, they lose their qualifications, they lose any, because they're deemed as unusual. So what we do is get them, take them on complete adventurous activities, fitness training, boxing training, outdoor pursuits, walking, running, whatever we can do. We person of center to each individual. He's not interested in boxing, but he likes lifting weights. Yeah. He loves being outside doing bushcraft. But I'd would rather do compass reading you find out which is which, and then we just push it. I mean, you push hard, you work hard, and so these kids are a real loss, and there's too many schools, too many people that are in this stuck situation. There's not enough companies, the government are not doing enough. Yeah, you could go on, but the kids are
so you just got to find that one thing that they like to do, and then you can anchor everything else to it. And I think that, like, the kid that likes the box or the kid that likes to do his weight, like a lot of kids don't like normal sports, like your standard football, like hockey or whatever you're playing. So, like, when we have kids that come to our gym that don't play sports, but they'll love coming to the gym, because the first thing I do is, like, we're going to teach them to become strong. You're going to be strong, and I guarantee you're going to be stronger than all your friends, because none of your friends know how to lift weights perfectly. And that's what we're going to do. And that builds competence, which gives you confidence, which then, hey, I know I can do this. It takes time. Because that's the one thing we say. It's like, if you can give us the time, we'll give you the result. And like you say, working with kids that just mightn't have had, you could have had a bad teacher. They just mightn't have gotten school. And it hasn't been, it's not explained to them. It's like, you have to do this. Well, okay, explain to me. Like, for me, it's like, I always ask the question, why? Why do I need this in my life? And most kids are like, I don't, like, my son, pick up your shoes. Why? Because the house is messy. Why? There's grand. There's nothing, like, it's nothing going to happen. The shoes are there, and it's not causing any problems. But I like a neat and tidy house. And so, well, this is the reason why we do it. We tidy up after ourselves so the place doesn't become a mess. And then it's a relaxing place, and we can chill out then. And then there's less giving out in the house, and we all roll in and do our chores and do our little bits that we do. Then we get to spend more time doing things we like to do. So yeah, the discipline equals the freedom. And I think like what you're saying, what you're doing is like you're giving the kids or showing the kids the options of there's more to life than being told to do things that you're struggling with. Because a lot of kids are just struggling. It's not that they're bad at it. They're just struggling. Yeah. And they just need that understanding of why it's needed or why, okay, you're not getting, but maybe you can get this instead.
If you do this, you'll get this.
Yeah, give it, you know,
I always have the adage, I add choices, I never take choices away. I always give them an extra choice. Where, you know, if they, a certain degree, I always add choices to what they got. Don't take the choices away from them because they're losing, in their world, they're losing something. If you do this, you will get to be fitter. You will get to be more confident, or you will learn a new skill, or you'll learn how to sharpen an axe. You'll learn how to make a fire. And then just imagine if you go out tomorrow and you've got nothing, you know what to do. You know how to seek people. And it's the how, it's the who as well as the how. It's just how we get these kids, all kids, to have a fundamental foundation that is their default. And that they can go on and go, I don't know what's going to happen in life, but I know I feel I have the skills, or I can learn the skills, the coping mechanisms. And that's the biggest thing, is kids don't know how to cope anymore.
Yeah.
They freak, they panic.
Yeah.
They don't know who to turn to, what to do. And that's, in their world, they've got the internet. So use the internet learn how to do something, learn how to be a programmer, learn how to use your iPhone more, phone better, learn how to build a house to brick by brick, or whatever the skill they want to do. But fundamentally we should be teaching kids from day one. Yes, maths is important, science and history, whatever they want to go into, but we're not teaching the fundamental skills of life.
Yeah.
As cliche and as cheesy as it sounds, we're not.
And I think a part of that would be, and this is one of the things, and I know I get a bit of flack for saying it, is that this is where a parent needs to be a parent. You have to teach your kid life skills. Whether you like doing those things or not, you need to do those things because they're a product of the environment. And I think a lot of people will rely on the school system, the education system, to do it for them. But their job is to just educate the kids. It's not to, well, they can, but I think a parent should be like, if you're not active, start getting active, and then helping your kids become active, going for walks, going into nature, doing a challenge every couple of, like every 3 months, just do something as a family, whether your teenager wants to do it or not, it's mandatory. And then it becomes normal. Yeah. So no kid, like, I don't know too many kids that want to go on a big hike with your dad. But last Sunday, I brought my son out for a 3-hour hike, and he enjoyed it. And the best thing was, I said to him, 2 hours in, I said, how much did you think about your iPad? And he goes, I didn't. I was like, if we were at home, what would you have all constantly asked me for? iPad. So you can't just say you can't have something, you have to replace it with something. And then over time, it will be, if not, it will be the memories of, I used to always go on hikes with my dad. And that, and I think that's the parent's job as well, is to find like stuff that, like, that you do to bring them out and like learn those things, like navigating and just being out of the concrete jungle. And
it's replacing so in the autistic world, or the world, some of the parts I work in, is that when you take something, so if they have a repetitive behavior or the non-verbal, there's tactile, you have to replace that behavior with another high activity that they get the same benefit from.
To,
like, the walking, he got a huge benefit from walking, so that you could replace that more than the iPad, because they are learning more, they get more feeling from that activity. So it's replacing it with a high end. In the autistic world, behaviors are damaging, behaviors are dangerous to other people and themselves. So sometimes we have to get in there and help them quickly to get out of that behavior. And it is quick replacement with a high-end activity. And then you go back to the likes and dislikes and things we don't ask children. What do you actually like? What don't you like? being more personal centered. That's my whole ethos, is personal centered. You know, we have positive behavior plans, you know, looking at what they like, what they don't like, what happens when this, when they behave in this way, what do we do? How do we, as parents, support staff, teachers? When this happens, we do this. And if that doesn't work, this worked well, that didn't work well. You know, it's all those kinds of things. Is that we, that's what I try to do as well, is to teach the staff and the teachers the tools to equip these young kids to ask themselves questions, to have a bit more confidence, you know, and go, actually, I don't agree with that, but these are the reasons why I don't agree with this. I don't want to do this because of this, but, oh, actually, I will try this. Or, you know, in the autistic world, they can't behave like this because it's damaging. So what do we do as people, staff members, to give them the tool? And it's providing that high activity for them, for example. And fitness is the major thing. Walks, running, you know, you can make things simple in my world as autistic people, just putting shopping away.
Yeah.
You know, it's a repetitive going for a walk, picking sticks up. You know, it's just finding something that works for them, and then then you abusing that situation to get them to do more. And I'll just pick up an extra stick. I'll just go that little bit further. Take another five steps for me. You know, and it's just constantly pushing. And I suppose that's what we do as a job of fitness in the world of autism, or the kids that are deemed as challenging. It's just pushing, like always pushing that little bit further. I've got on you, just do another minute for me. Just even do 30 seconds for me.
Yeah.
And then just keep pushing and always being positive.
And that's the beauty of it, because it's I think people are, would like the kind of the quick fix. How can I fix it? How can I get it done? I was like, well, give me 4 years and we'll do a little bit every week for 4 years. And in 4 years, we look back in it and we'll go, wow, look how far we've come. And then we'll still want to go more. And it's kind of like you doing boxing and like me doing like challenges I do. It's like, I'm always kind of like, what else can I do? What is possible? What can I do that could inspire someone else or inspire my kids, or just what's the next challenge? And it's going to take time and it's going to take resources. And again, depending on how much you're willing to give to it, but it's always that like progression. And I think that we always need to be looking at progression. Like how can we progress our lives? It shouldn't be like, we're done. I'm done. I'm happy.
Yeah.
I'm now 42 and I don't have to do anything else. Kind of thing.
I've always found is that if I enjoy something, it's easy. Mm. You know, it's finding that I enjoy training. I enjoy running. I enjoy getting in the ring. I enjoy helping people. I enjoy lighting fires. It's easy for me. It's not a job in that context. It's easy. So it's finding what they love, because whenever you find something you love, and what surprises me about kids is how much they're surprised about when they have done something new or done something they haven't tried before. They go, do you know what? I really enjoyed that. I got so much from that. You know, they surprise themselves, you know, and to get kids to come back, I really enjoyed that today. Well, you just made a fire, mate, and built a den. Yeah, but I haven't done it before. And I got on with Bob that we don't get on in school, and we chat and we laughed and we shared things like that. Brilliant. So when it happens again, you know that you can do this or do that, or, you know, like I say, continuous progression is development, isn't it? It's always developing somebody. And we do use my experience, use your experience. And what we try and do is just show young kids that there's always opportunity. In every moment, there's opportunity. You know, whether it's learning, whether it's fitness, there's always an opportunity in life to learn, to do something new, to try something. You know, I have my own personal, I have a 10% rule. I do something by 10% every day. That's whether I go to work, whether I sit down at the office, whatever I do. So I continuously, and what happens then is that when something does change, I can adapt quicker. And it's just called the 10% rule. And it helps me mentally know it, to just to keep things, stop getting stagnant, keep motivating me, keep pushing me. And it's, and I use it as an anchor. I just say 10%. Okay. So it's providing those tools, isn't it, to try and get them to just to be better, feel better and be better. And the feeling's a huge emotion.
Not true. One of the things I want to touch back on is, I know when we initially connected, you were saying that your fitness helps you with your mental with your mental health and stuff like that. So were you struggling, or were you in a bad place, or was it just
about So what happened to me in 2018, I separated from my wife after 20 years marriage. I had a horse riding accident and my world just fell to pieces. And then I lost both my grandparents and my brother-in-law of 47, all in the same year. I just literally lost the plot. Yeah. And I went to the doctors and they said, "Oh, you got borderline personality disorder, and this and ADHD," and put this heavy label on me, and it felt even worse. And so I took a decision to go self-employed, and that's where I got into to the Denby Boxing Gym. And that's what I was like, "Oh my God, I don't want to do this. I don't want to train." But 20 minutes on the bag, not even 20 minutes, 2 minutes on the bag, it changed my whole aspect. It changed my whole life. It made me go, "Bloody hell, I feel good. I'm that good. I feel really buzzed. I feel really good." So next time, I'm going to go a little bit longer tomorrow. It changed my whole outlook on what I can do for myself and how it made me feel. It changed my whole belief system, in a sense. And because I really did struggle. And, you know, I'm 24 years, February. So back when I was 15, I became a heroin addict. I left home. I got a good home. Great parents, are both farmers, you know, really great home. I couldn't have asked for a better upbringing. But I, for whatever reason, went down the wrong. It was a heroin addict. I'd just gone 15. You know, I left home. I went for the criminal system. I served 2.5 years of a 5-year sentence for a serious crime. I was messed up. But I'm 24 years clean now. You know, so when I came out of prison, and I got into that's how I got into the world of healthcare and social work, was I got a job at a youth project centre. That's what got that's my original, where I got interested in helping people, because people had helped me. Someone took me aside and said, "Tim, you're not a bad person. You've just done these things that have, for the reasons you had to or decided to at that time, that's what's happened to you." So my mental health goes further back.
Yeah.
When you look at it from my childhood and things that had happened. And then obviously I took the wrong road, went through drugs, went through the criminal system, you know. So your mental health does have a lot to do with how things have happened in your life.
Yeah.
And then you think everything's all right, but it doesn't take much to knock it off the rails. It doesn't take a huge amount to send you west again. But fitness, it really changed me. I gave up smoking, stopped smoking weed. You know, it changed everything for me. It really did. And because I wanted to feel better, I wanted to be fit. I didn't want to be smoking. I didn't want to be hammered all the time. You know, I felt a new person. I really did. So, you know, I can't say enough about it, because it really did. And now when I feel low, I know when I'm not keeping fit, my mental health does go down. My mental health will struggle. And sometimes I go really down, and sometimes I start to notice it. But it's being physical activity, it's going out walking, it's just doing some exercise. But I've now got a great routine where I naturally get into it. I can go and do 3 minutes, skip in, 2 minutes to the bag, 5 minutes wait, feel better. My mental health struggled immensely, and you know, I could have ended up in hospital, and I didn't, thankfully. And because the doctor said, "I don't think a hospital would help you, I'm going to help you this way," and gave me some physical activities. And you know, and that's when I went self-employed, took a huge risk. And luckily for me, I bumped into somebody that worked at Denby Boxing Club, and that's how I got into boxing at a later age. But fitness has always been a great thing for me, but that really did get me out of my mental health, and still does today.
It's definitely a way to change your state. I know Paul says you're in control of your state, so you're in control of your energy. So if you're feeling low, and I know if you're in a position where you're very depressed, and you just can't move yourself. But like on a daily basis for most people is, you have, like, I know for a fact, and I used to say this to all my clients, is like, they're saying, "I don't know how to get motivated in the morning." But I said, stick on, because talking about morning routines, it's like, stick on the one song that makes you dance. If you dance for 3 minutes in your kitchen every morning, you will be happier, just happier. Just happier going into your day.
Yeah.
because you've literally moved your body, you've made yourself happy, and you did, you can, you don't need a tablet, you don't need an expensive coach, you just need someone, you just need to be able to go press play, learn music, headphones on, whatever. And then the physical side of things is that you reset, blood flow, more blood to your brain, more blood to your muscles, lymphatic drain, all benefits of exercise, change your energy, change your state, you get an endorphin release. Because and why do you get endorphin release after exercise? Because it's good for you. It's a reward for doing something. Yeah. And then, like you said, you set yourself up. And I think if we set kids, like going back to kids, if we set our kids up every day with some sort of exercise before they go to school, kids will be happier going to school.
Yeah, yeah. If you look at China and Japan, they do companies. If you look at companies and kids, they do fitness exercise. You know, not every kid's going to do it. But yeah, it's a massive step forward of fitness. I can't, I'll go for a run later because I know I don't feel good today. I'm not having a good day today. I don't feel, woke up this morning, no reason, but I just don't feel good. And I know that getting out on the bag later or going for a run later, we're going to go and see a new gym later, just because I know that I don't particularly want, I don't feel like doing it, but I know that I will feel better after.
You're not letting your emotions dictate you dictate what you do, but basically no matter what your emotions are. And again, that's one of the things that you I think we're living this side of, if you feel bad, you shouldn't do anything. I said no, you should still have to do the things, because at the end of the day, and this is something that I've learned, is that I'll give an example. Actually, my first 2 months of this year, January, February, I felt flat. I felt the company wasn't really doing well. I felt I was stressed out a bit. Just things weren't going well. When I reviewed the first 2 months of the year, we had two of our most profitable months. We had more, obviously more members. I'd done more things. I had more savings. I was like, actually, I've had a very successful 2 months. I personally wasn't feeling great, but that wasn't to do with what was actually happening. So your feeling doesn't mean doesn't really show you what's happening in reality at the same time. Exactly. So if you just keep turning up and keep doing it, like if you go for your run later, you're going to feel better after your run. The thought of going for the run is probably like, I don't want to go. But when you know when it's good that you're done, because you're going to release that stress through exercise, or that the thought process that's in your head right now through exercise, and you go, and again, I've never met anyone that's gone, I've never met someone that has given out that they did exercise after the fact.
Yeah.
I only meet people that go, I should have exercised today, or I should have been better today. But I've never met anyone that's done the opposite, gone, well, I exercised today and I feel like it's the worst thing I should have done. Like, it's not really going to be a bad thing. But obviously, so Tim, I didn't really know we were going to go down the road of the youth stuff and the kids and stuff like that, which is brilliant because it's kind of what I'm into, is what I'm kind of working towards myself. But with your story, and obviously it's from the age of 15 and what you've gone through and where you've come to and what you're doing and how you're living your life now, you have learned a lot of lessons, which you can now help a lot of people. But what would you say to other men who might be kind of struggling, could be in their 40s, 30s, 40s, and just they're not exercised, they don't know what to be doing with themselves. What piece of advice would you give to them if you were in a room full of men that were struggling and were just kind of stuck in a rut?
Depending on how they are, what they're going through, it's starting small. Doing small things one step at a time, making bed, for example. First task of the day, make your bed. Build up a routine. Find something you like. Find a routine. Get into a routine. Like Paul, morning ritual, meditation, journal, for example. Find a routine that works for you. Think about what you want, how you want to achieve that. It's a difficult one. Yeah, it is a difficult one. It's because, let me think about it. It's given when you're talking to them, it's helping them to understand that there are options, there are choices, and you don't feel like it, but putting certain pointers in the day will help you feel better, will help you start to realize that you can do things, that you are capable, and that you're able to, no matter what position you are, there are people that can help you. There are people support to talk, go and find somebody, find a group to talk to, find a personal trainer, find out what you like. And if you really speak to the doctors, find out what you can do, who can help you. If you're feeling depressed and you're feeling, what other avenues can you feel better from other than taking medication? Are there, is there, like I say, is there groups that you can talk to? It's a difficult one. It depends on, because how I work, it's quite face-to-face, like you and me, they tell me their problems and I guide them through that. So it's a but from my own perspective is that I never gave up. I thanked the people that were there for me. So by giving someone that opportunity, that's what I want to give back, is helping somebody, giving them the chance that you can do this. And this is what you can do. You can go and you can start a routine. I can help you get a job. I can help you feel more confident. I can help you to seek out what you need and what you want. It's giving my time, helping someone. Yeah, it's a difficult one
I think you kind of nailed it with just start small. As people that I suppose, but a lot of people think that they have to overhaul their life. It's like, make your bed in the morning for the next 14 days straight. First thing you do, and then it's like, that's success, because you did what you said you'd do. And then the next thing could be, get an ice cold cloth and rub it all over your face to wake you up every morning for the next 14 days.
Because
shower, and then you can build, small things on a daily basis will build to you doing things that are uncomfortable, but it's getting you on that road,
when I'm talking, I think I could say this, but I use a thing called the task analysis, and it's getting somebody that's autistic and nonverbal, and it's how that if they want to make a cup of tea, for example, they've never made a cup of tea, so tomorrow they're going to put the water in, the tea bag in, and next day they put the tea bag and the milk in. So it's just again breaking what you want to do, breaking it down, and like I say, just doing a bit at a time, and each day. Tomorrow I put the milk in. Tomorrow, the day after that, I put the milk and the tea bag in. Or I'm going to make a bed. I'm going to make my bed. And I'm going to write my journal. Or I'm going to make my bed, make a journal, and meditate. Whatever the routine is. Yeah. So yeah, it's starting small and don't give up, because there's lots of people that would talk to you and would listen to your story.
Mm, yeah.
And listen to what you have to say. And it's hard to say. I find it hard to say, should I say, being there for people.
Well, yeah, I think overall, the kind of the outlook that I would have, and I think what you said, I resonate with a lot is you got to do something like 10%, do something each day.
Yeah.
And if you're stuck in a rut, go ask for help. And I know that's a manly thing not to.
Yeah.
It's a hard thing to go and ask, because then you're showing weakness. And I don't know. I wouldn't be one that shows a lot of emotion. Never have. I get called robot, cyborg by my brother and sister at funerals because I don't cry.
Yeah.
It's not that I don't feel emotions. It's just things. It's not I'm trying to be a hard man or anything along those lines. It's just the way it is. But I don't think not asking for help is a weakness. Like asking for help is showing weakness. I think it's showing a lot of strength to admit that you're struggling. And I think a lot of men, a lot of men probably need that. They need to know that it's actually a stronger thing to do is to go and say, listen, I'm struggling and I need some advice or help or an ear to listen to.
Yeah. And I'd use myself as an example. I went and got fit. I trained every day. I used fitness. I pushed through my feelings. This is what I did. This might not work for you, but you might be able to take something from this, that I got fit. I went to training every day. I looked at what I can do. I made a goal. I did little tasks every day. That's what's worked for me. And that's where you can then support them through that process. It's a process, it's supporting people. And it's doesn't, people have been in worse situations than me by far, but I'm here today. You know, so if I can shorten your journey, then this is, you know, this is what we can do. We can help support you with a job, with seeking help, supporting people, but just don't ever give up. You know, it's, yeah.
Yeah. And I think, and like I said at the start, this is the reason why I'm doing podcasts. I don't want to just do fitness podcasts and just talk to business owners about like the benefits of low bar squatting versus high bar squatting and all these things, which I geek out on it anyway.
Yeah.
But people's stories and people's journeys of how they got themselves right or how to help other people or lessons they've learned. So it's not failure, it's feedback. I love that one. I'm going to use that one. I won't tell them I got a few. I was going to tell them.
No, please do. No, it's not mine. I don't own it. Use it.
But Tim, like, first, thanks for being on the show. I don't know, Tim, like, do you have a website or anything we can use in the show notes for them or anyone that's like wants to kind of see what you do?
Yes. Yeah. So I've got a website. It's training for healthcare, healthandsocialcare.com. Okay. And then my Facebook is training for healthcare.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll have them in the show notes. Tim, if you can send them over to me, I'll put them in the show notes for when it goes out. And guys, if you like the show, obviously give us a like, subscribe, all that stuff, leave a positive comment. If you have any or are struggling and need some advice, leave a comment. I'm happy to respond. And if I can help in any way, or if Tim sees them and he can help in any way and offer any sort of advice, we would happily do that. And guys, this is firstly, Tim, thanks for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we will see you all on the next show.
The big thing I say is like, you got to win the morning.
Heavy requirements on them to lift heavy weights.
The conversation has to be changed.
What you truly value.
The right way, there's no wrong way.
Become the source of struggle.
I can't like find myself in tears from the physical pain.
You're listening to the Stephen Kinsler Podcast.